Amber Charles Alexis is a public health nutritionist and registered dietitian located in Trinidad and Tobago. Through her blog and freelance writing, Amber shares culturally competent nutrition and is fondly known as the cultural dietitian. Stay tuned to hear Amber Charles discuss her no-diet approach to nutrition therapy, rooted in body autonomy, and how you can effectively identify and avoid quick fixes and fad diets.
Podcasting from Dallas, Texas, I'm Shireen, and this is the Yumlish Podcast. Yumlish is working to empower you to take charge of your health through diet and exercise and reduce the risk of chronic conditions like type 2 diabetes and heart disease. We hope to share a unique perspective and a culturally relevant approach to managing these chronic conditions with you each week.
Welcome, Amber.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
An absolute pleasure. Diving right in, Amber, I'd like to learn more about what led you to work within nutrition and then focus specifically on culturally competent nutrition therapy.
Definitely. So my interest in nutrition began in early childhood after my mom experienced a stroke. However, my specific interest on culturally competent nutrition therapy grew during my dietetic internship. I came to the U.S. To pursue my master's in public health and my dietetic internship or training. And it was through this program that I realized that cultural competence in dietetics is something that can be improved on. It's something that some patients or clients struggled with being able to receive information pertinent to their food culture traditions and practices. And there was a communication barrier between these patients and the dietitian. So I saw that this is a gap. This is something that I am passionate about. And I wanted to focus my practice on food culture.
Mm. I love that. You talk about a no-diet approach. Mm. Can you tell us what a no-diet approach to nutrition is?
So a no-diet approach is no counting of calories, no overly restrictive nutrition approaches to eating. And this is really because we've been told that diet or dieting is really the only way to improve your health. Mm. The word diet itself has been misconstrued because it really originally meant just a pattern of eating. But right now we know that diet means so many restrictive things. And this can become an issue for someone. It's a psychological issue because you're thinking, oh my gosh, I can't have something. It makes you want it even more. It has been shown to lead to more disordered eating patterns. So my approach is to move away from that, taking into consideration the mindset around food and really showing you how you can build nutritionally balanced, healthy and nutritious meals using your cultural foods without all of the fanatics of dieting or diet culture.
And why is this no-diet approach especially applicable for individuals with chronic conditions?
Sure. So we know that a chronic condition is any condition that you have that lasts beyond 6 months. And most times, these are conditions that you're going to have to manage for the rest of your lives. Many of the diet trends that we see are short-term. So we want to be able to empower our patients and clients with nutrition knowledge and information that helps them to make sustainable and long-term changes so that they can continue to live in a way that's going to support good management of their condition, whatever that may be, if it may be diabetes or high blood pressure, high cholesterol, while being able to enjoy their foods. Many times diets, because they're short-term, they bring you these really quick and nice results, but then you find yourself struggling back and forth between how can you really manage that chronic condition?
Mm-hmm. You know, when you talked about sort of fad diets, how can individuals really identify those types of fad diets and really avoid the quick fixes that come with those? How do we go about navigating that?
Yeah, so these fad diets, I think it's very easy to identify a fad diet because one, it's going to be very popular. That's the first thing. Okay. But so there are these
don't go for the popular choice. So if it's popular, it's probably a fad.
I mean, yes, most likely. So, you know, the road less traveled sort of concept here. So fad diets or quick fixes promise rapid weight loss, maybe, you know, like lose 10 pounds in a week, or, you know, you're going to lose 40 pounds in a month, something like really drastic. It usually encourages you to avoid a lot of foods or even food groups on the whole. And it may be something, again, that's really popularized. There are a lot of marketing that goes into it, or a lot of companies that are promoting this style of eating because it's really a money-making industry compared to more sustainable, a more balanced approach to nutrition. So those fad diets, again, are going to be short-term, maybe 6 weeks, maybe 1 month, or sometimes even 7 days. We see like 7-day detoxes and cleanses. That's just a juice cleanse, no food, and then you return to a normal pattern of eating. So those are all quick fixes and fad diets that can, you know, have a long-term negative impact on your health.
I see. How is the concept of body autonomy related to this no diet philosophy?
So body autonomy, you know, is really someone's ability to make a decision about their personal body. It's usually referred to in a space of safety and it's a human right or social justice concept that as an individual, I need to be able to make decisions about my body without being forced to do something else. And it's often highlighted with respect to violent crimes and rape. In the world of nutrition, however, we look at body autonomy as being able to make a decision, being able to have equal and fair access to medical and nutrition interventions, regardless of your body size. So it's really linked to body weight. What we found is that a number of persons who may be overweight or particularly obese in that obese category do experience a lot of systemic discrimination and prejudice, bias, that they are not given equal and fair access to appropriate medical interventions. So when you say body autonomy, it's I am giving you the empowerment that you get to say, even if I'm overweight or obese, I don't want to focus on my weight. I want to focus on my chronic condition or my medical condition, and I want to be able to receive advice that is more detailed than you need to lose weight.
And so how does this sort of inherent bias, how is that shaping or, influencing medical care and nutrition therapy interventions?
Yeah, so some studies have shown that persons who are obese because of this systemic weight stigma and systemic or weight-focused medical system are not receiving some of that appropriate care. So instead of being able to access maybe certain surgeries or medication, they are being told, lose weight to fix your condition. Now, we know that these chronic conditions do not just go away. Even if you lose weight, there is so much more that goes into managing them. So let's take, for example, someone who may have diabetes. Mm-hmm. We know that both slim persons or thin persons and then persons who are larger in larger bodies or fat or obese or overweight can both have diabetes, type 2 diabetes. Yet someone who's thin is most likely to receive, you know, an appropriate medication regimen or more detailed nutrition advice compared to someone who is larger. So they are told, okay, you need to lose X amount of pounds or you need to lose weight. And they may or may not receive the same, you know, intervention. They may not receive the same detail of explanation given to them about what steps they need to take. So it's seen that with this weight being a main focus of that medical system, that sometimes it almost deprives or may rob some persons of their true medical intervention or steps needed to improve their situation. Because yes, you can lose weight. It's not going to automatically make you diabetes free or no longer have high blood pressure. So being able to identify that these are chronic conditions, weight plays a role, but it's not the only thing was not sometimes a mean thing to improve your health.
Mm.
Same thing with respect to nutrition. Some persons may think, well, I need to lose weight. I need to lose weight to manage my blood sugar and do anything to lose weight. And yo-yo diet or weight cycle, which is going to create a lot of pressure on their liver, for example. So you want to be able to do things in a sustainable, gradual manner. You're not doing the quick fixes. You're not doing the rapid weight loss. And you're incorporating, actually educating the person. This is what you need to add, because we're often told what we need to take out, what we need to restrict.
Mm.
But being able to give them that information of this is what you need to add, and this is why you are adding it, so that they have an increased knowledge, understanding, and respect for what it is they are doing,
mm-hmm.
compared to, well, this is what a doctor told me, or this is what my dietitian told me. But actually being educated mm-hmm. is going to really help them to make these long-term changes.
I love that. What are some examples of pieces of education that you see that have been lacking, perhaps, that should be either common knowledge yeah. or that the doctor should have imparted on the patient, that you've probably seen continuous gaps in your nutrition therapy when you provide it?
Definitely the fact that doctors have been telling patients a lot that they need to avoid carbohydrates if they have diabetes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a major gap, because it's sending the wrong message that you cannot eat starchy foods or you cannot have carbohydrates. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to maintain your blood sugars. And I think the piece that's missing is being able to say, this is how you can have it, or these are the types that you need to focus on. Focus on complex carbohydrates more than refined carbohydrates. Pair your carbohydrate foods with vegetables and protein and healthy fats instead of avoiding it completely. It's almost like a band-aid solution of just avoiding carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. And we know that carbohydrates are not the same thing as just starchy foods. You get carbohydrates from your peas and beans. You get them from all starchy foods. When you think of bread, any flour products or pasta, we get them from your dairy products as well. And fruits, and a small amount from vegetables. So if you really have to avoid all carbohydrates, you're practically cutting out most of the food groups, mm-hmm. except for healthy fats. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one of the major ones that I've seen. I've also heard a lot of gluten-free and dairy-free for PCOS management as a very standard and generic treatment. And really and truly, there's no scientific evidence right now that suggests gluten-free and dairy-free as a standard PCOS diet. There isn't a standard PCOS diet, but what we found is that if someone has a lactose intolerance, trending to a dairy-free can support and improve symptoms related to that. What we found is that also gluten-free, because someone may adopt a gluten-free lifestyle, they naturally tend to eat less processed foods and more whole foods. So you do see some improvement there. So I think that, you know, there are a lot of generic things out there that are really misinformed and continue to confuse clients about what they can and cannot do. And I really wish that sometimes we continue to use the massive pool of dietitians that we have, so that dietitians can continue to closely guide and monitor patients with respect to nutritional changes, instead of continuing to instill food fears around managing chronic conditions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Coming back to cultural competence and, you know, sort of mm-hmm. talking and touching on that a little bit more, what are the dangers of nutritional therapy without cultural competence?
Yes. So I think the biggest danger is lack of compliance. Poor communication is going to be the second to that. And I say lack of compliance, not because the patient just does not want to do what the dietitian is saying or what the doctor has recommended, but simply because it's not feasible, it's not practical, it's not relatable, it's not part of their current lifestyle or their food practices. So it's very difficult to make changes, and we sometimes make them confused about, so why isn't my food healthy? And how can I, or maybe in some traditions, maybe your mother-in-law is preparing your foods for you, or your relative is preparing your foods for you, and how do you even go to the older generation and say, don't make this anymore, we can't eat this? It's almost like really disregarding someone's entire, you know, heritage to make mm-hmm. certain culinary changes. So compliance is going to be a major issue if they're unable to. Some people are able to stick to the other versions of diets, but then they become frustrated over time. So I would say compliance is a major thing. And then poor communication, because if I believe that you are disregarding my culture, you're not able to teach me how to eat within my food traditions, then I don't think you really respect me or that you're really seeing me as an individual. Maybe you're just seeing that I am someone to, you know, sort of be twisted and turned, or just completely disregarding that side of things and giving an inferiority complex to another style of eating, which is usually through a Eurocentric lens.
Mm-hmm. What tips and advice do you have for individuals wanting to include cultural foods into their meals and still eat well and eat right? What tips do you have for them?
Yes. So I do always encourage patients to align yourself with a medical team or dietitians that share your values, because they're going to understand your food, are going to be able to really zoom in and give you some personalized advice. Beyond that, everything, as the old-time saying is, everything in moderation. Mm. We do want most of your food to be nutrient-dense foods. We do want to focus on those unsaturated healthy fats that may come from nuts and seeds and avocados. And we do want to have complex carbohydrates when possible. But if you think about always having a variety of food groups on your plate, so if you do have some carbohydrate foods, and you can't have more than one carbohydrate food at a meal, of course, you want to be able to eat moderate amounts of each. You want to pair it with protein foods, so any meat, if you eat meat. If you don't eat meat and you're having peas and beans, or even if you're having some vegetables doesn't always have to be raw salads. It can be coleslaw, it can be cooked vegetables, depending on how you do that. And then you want to also combine that with eating mindfully, so you pay attention to your eating habits. Are you eating and drinking sugary stuff at the same time? Are you constantly eating past fullness? Are you acknowledging when you are hungry and eating food instead of like drinking water or something along those lines? You'd want to connect with a dietitian who shares your values, your food traditions and practices, and someone who exemplifies cultural competence in nutrition, simply because they can acknowledge this and really combine that along with nutritional balance and approaches to help you to manage your lifestyle and chronic conditions.
I love that. And so what you're really saying at the heart of this, Amber, is if you want to eat healthy, you do not have to let go of the foods that you've known, that you're familiar with. It isn't all or none.
Yes.
There is essentially this middle ground to where you can adapt the foods that you've culturally known in a healthier way that you can sustain and aim toward better health with.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Perfect. I love that. That, you know, that is something that we harp on and on at Yumlish ourselves. So it's so nice to sort of hear that cultural competence is finally getting its, it is getting its recognition, because I feel it is so undervalued as a tool for providing, better health and, better health outcomes. Yes, at the end of the day.
Definitely. It needs to be continue to push at the forefront of both nutrition and medical interventions for the best outcomes, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So with that, Amber, we're toward the end of the episode here today, but I would love for our listeners to learn more about how they can connect with you after this episode and just learn more about your work.
Thank you. You can connect with me via Instagram or Facebook at The Cultural Dietitian. That's BHECULTURALDIETITIAN, The Cultural Dietitian. I also have a website and blog at AmberCharlesRDN.com. The tagline for that is also The Cultural Dietitian. So if you Google me, you should find my site, where you can get a lot of more information that I post on nutrition and culturally competent nutrition as well.
Lovely. Thank you so much again, Amber, for your time here with us today. Certainly got to learn a lot Love to see this cultural competence and incorporate it just broadly within nutrition therapy and the approach that you take. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
So to our listeners out there, let us know, what is your favorite way to incorporate cultural foods into your meals? Head over to our social media and find us there. Until the next time.
Thank you for listening to the Yumlish podcast. Make sure to follow us on social media at yumlish_ on Instagram and Twitter, and at yumlish on Facebook and LinkedIn for tips about managing your diabetes or other chronic conditions. You can also visit our website, yumlish.com, for even more information and to get involved with all of the exciting opportunities Yumlish has to offer. All of the links are in the show notes below, so please don't hesitate to check us out. If you like this week's show, make sure to subscribe to the Yumlish podcast, give us a like, comment, or a 5-star review, and share us with a friend. This is Shireen signing off. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time. Remember, your health always comes first. Stay well.